Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Today, we return to the listener library for a recommendation from our mysterious listener, Joe.
Joe writes, "Just discovered your podcast. I've enjoyed OTR for about 2 years now. A friend and I would dissect the broadcast similar to you all. I can easily say you guys make it more fun. Thanks for the yucks and the good picks. P.S. Please do The Chess Master, a CBS Radio Mystery Theater broadcast."
CBS Radio Mystery Theater was broadcast on CBS Radio affiliates from 1974 to 1982. Created by Golden Age radio producer Hyman Brown, the series was part of a larger effort to reinvigorate the lost art of radio drama. In addition to CBS Radio Mystery Theater, the network launched the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater in 1977, also produced by Hyman Brown, and Sears Radio Theater in 1979. Other similar attempts to revive the medium included NPR's Earplay and Rod Serling's syndicated series, The Zero Hour.
Actor E.G. Marshall served as the host for most of the program's 8-year run. Unlike Inner Sanctum's Raymond, the host from Hyman Brown's other famous radio series, Marshall was never self-consciously artificial or over-the-top. His gentle, grandfatherly demeanor eased listeners into the dark world of the story, creating an appealing incongruity between teller and story. Marshall left CBS Radio Mystery Theater February 1, 1982, shortly before the program came to an end. Tammy Grimes took over host duties for the remainder of the run. Her brief tenure meant she never had a chance to establish herself in the minds of listeners. Today's episode will give you a chance to hear her in the role.
The Chess Master also features actor Fred Gwynne, best known for his roles in the television sitcoms Car 54, Where Are You? And The Munsters. In the 1980s and early 90s, Gwynne appeared in several popular films, including The Cotton Club, Pet Sematary, and My Cousin Vinny. He died in 1993 at the age of 66.
And now let's listen to The Chess Master from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, first aired May 28th, 1982.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker. Listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... isn't regarded as a dangerous pastime, and rightfully so. Of course, there are stories, perhaps apocryphal, about the game being played in ancient times with real people instead of pieces. And then indeed, it can become deadly. Even today, however, we read about the use of mind-controlling devices and other mystic aids in world championship matches. But chess, among those who play it for fun, is just harmless relaxation. Or is it?
I'm not interested in playing any more chess with the old man. I'm telling you, here and now, I'm finished. No more chess.
You're not thinking, Charlie. You're letting yourself be driven by silly superstitions. If you refuse to play this game, it could be dangerous for you. Deadly dangerous, remember that. And the next move... is yours.
Our mystery drama, The Chess Master, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Paul Hecht and Fred Gwynne. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
How about something cool and juicy?
How about a Bartlett pear?
Summer, summer, this wouldn't be summer without us.
California Bartletts are at their peak.
Fresh on the tree, taste them and see.
They're easy to ripen, sweet and delicious, like biting into summer.
Nature's way of smiling, sunset on the tree, is meant for me.
Bartlett pears, sponsored by the growers of California summer fruit.
Weekdays on CBS Television. Wake up to comedy with One Day at a Time.
You really think you have stuff, don't you, Simon?
Ladies in this building, don't call me super for nothing.
Then, keep laughing as Mel lays down the law on Alice.
There is only one rule in a restaurant business, Vera. Get them to swallow it.
And The Price is Right with the priceless Bob Barker. That's One Day at a Time, Alice and The Price is Right, weekdays on CBS Television. Check your local listings for the time.
I've had my share of winning teams over the years, but one of the best teams ever fielded, in my opinion, is not at the stadium, it's in the library. This is Era Parsegian, and I'm here to urge you to check out the teamwork at your library. You'll discover a winner. If you're looking for the answer to a question, any question, just dial the library's telephone reference center. In most libraries, there are specifically trained teams who can find the information you need. Maybe your reading skills aren't up to par. Don't let that stop you from getting ahead. Start with the library. Many offer reading programs, and if yours doesn't, the team of librarians will know where to send you. And just in case you've forgotten, the library is one of the nation's great inflation fighters. Almost all services and programs are free. Whether you need to know how to play a better game, how to shop smart, or how to save energy at home, the library's team can help you score. Use your library and support its team.
A public service message from the American Library Association and this station.
Most Americans lead lives that are fairly routine. Some might even describe their lives as humdrum. But there are a few fortunate enough to be working at jobs they like. Others find life tolerable, if not dramatically exciting, with a series of highs and lows. However, when a real crisis arises, some people go right off the rails, and others, in trying to cope, find themselves faced, at the very least, with a sweeping change in their lifestyles.
I was fired today. It was my first time. I started to walk, just walk, aimlessly around New York. My compulsive walking took me to the lobby of one of the city's newest glass towers. It has a beautiful two-story lobby that runs an entire block and was used as a walkway between the streets. As I walked through, admiring the ficus trees and the artificial waterfall, my eye was caught by a chessboard completely set up for a game. Seated behind the board was a portly, white-haired gentleman who smiled up at me as I halted.
Good afternoon.
Oh, hi.
Do you play?
No, I dabble. I haven't played in years.
Well, that doesn't matter. If you'd care to sit down.
Don't play. Don't play, for Pete's sake. Don't play. Don't ever, ever sit down and play chess with him.
Now, Ben, you shouldn't let losing upset you so much. This is Ben Bradley, Mr.
Williams, Charlie Williams.
Pleasure, Mr. Williams. And certainly an explanation is in order here. You see, Ben here suffers from that most American disease, competition. He's highly competitive. And although we've played several games and he's lost only one more than he won, it's upsetting him terribly.
Well, that's okay. I understand.
I'd like to straighten this out. Please, isn't this true, what I just said, Ben?
I'll admit I'm a bad loser. I do have a tendency to overreact.
Thank you.
Williams, forget what I said. Oh, okay, Chessman, I'll be on my way since I see you have a game. Bye.
Bye. Now, Mr. Williams, since we've cleared up that little misunderstanding, would you care to play? You're not still thinking about Ben's blowing up, are
you? No, not exactly. I'm not an expert, though. I never was, and I'm certainly rusty.
Well, I'm hardly an international grandmaster myself.
Besides, I've just lost my job. I don't think I could concentrate.
Oh, well, there's no better way for you to forget your problems. This will help clear your mind. Come, sit down. Good. Now that you're comfortable, I'll make it even better for you by turning the board around and let you play the white pieces.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, good. Now, what shall we play for?
Hey, come on. You're a chess hustler. Good try, but no dice.
Oh, no. Please sit. I'm not usually guilty of such stupidity.
Neither am I. Find yourself another sucker.
I don't want to play for money. Never play for money. However, I must confess that although the game itself is stimulating, I like to add zest by putting up some worthless bauble or trinket like this. And you can do the same. Something of no intrinsic value.
This is crazy.
Oh, come now. If it weren't for that ridiculous outburst from Ben Bradley, you wouldn't think twice about putting up something you have on your person that's of no value to you. Isn't that true?
Who are you?
The name is Chessman. First name, Lawrence. But don't be put off by the last name. It's just a coincidence. I do like chess, but there's no other meaning to be read into it. Now, what will your stake be? Remember, something on you that's worthless.
Maybe a fingernail or a lock of hair? Is that what you had in mind?
Oh, I do like your vivid imagination, Mr. Williams. I do sincerely. Surely you don't think I'm a practitioner of voodoo.
No, I don't know what to make of you.
Why is it necessary to make anything out of me? I'm an eccentric you play the game of chess with, and we'll both enjoy it. Now, your stake.
Well, I can't think of anything... hold on. I have a key to the executive washroom that I won't be using anymore. Will that do?
Of course. Now, your move, I believe.
Okay.
Pawn to king four. Since you're rusty, let's just keep it simple. I will also move pawn to king four, which leaves the initiative entirely up to you. Pawn to king's bishop four. I should have realized that anyone who had the imagination to consider voodoo would employ the Muzio Gambit. You know, of course, that it's been regarded for years as unsound.
If properly defended.
Well, I shall certainly try, Mr. Williams. I shall certainly try.
Well, check. And I think also mate.
I regret to admit that you're right. I'm not one to offer excuses, but I'd forgotten exactly how lethal the Muzio Gambit attack can be if you allow your opponent to gain timing.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed the game.
As did I. Take your winnings.
Oh, no, forget it. I just play for...
I insist. Absolutely. I would feel ashamed if you didn't take this token of your victory. A debt of honor, sir.
Okay, if you feel that strongly.
I think it's only fair that if we ever play again, however, I should have a chance to win it back. Unless, of course, certain conditions should arise.
Oh? What condition?
Why, the conditions under which you would give it up.
Are you kidding?
I'm deadly serious. This is a city of strange happenings and unusual meetings. It may someday happen that you will come across someone who will say to you, the Muzio Gambit is a very unsound opening.
What?
If that should happen, you will hand over the trinket you won today. Immediately.
Oh, come on, what do you take me for?
I have your word.
Okay, you've got my word.
You've been let go? I don't believe it.
Why not, Susan? It happens all the time in this business.
Just because they lost the claim in the count isn't any reason to let you go. It isn't as if it were your fault.
I was the junior account executive. No account, no job.
But you've been with them for 6 years. Surely there are other accounts.
Well, they're not about to fire someone else to give me a job. I'll give Frank Fentress a call tomorrow. He'll find something for me.
You haven't called him yet?
No.
What did you do this afternoon? You must have known...
Sure, I knew, Susan. I just walked and walked trying to figure something out, and then I played chess.
You played chess?
Yeah, and I won, too. Look.
That's pretty.
No, it's not worth anything.
I know, but I could have it pierced. Run a silver chain through it, and it will make a lovely necklace.
No, I can't. I promised the old man I played with to keep it.
I'll be keeping it if I wear it, won't I?
Uh-uh, can't do it. I know it sounds silly, Susan, but the old geezer said if we ever played again, I should bring it with me, and maybe he could win it back.
You're going to play again?
Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I may not have it on me.
You just finished telling me that you had to keep it.
Yeah, unless someone comes up to me and says, the Muzio Gambit is a totally unsound opening, and then I'm to give the coin to him.
Unsound opening? You're the only one who's unsound, Charlie Williams. You're out of your mind.
The next morning, I went downtown to the Fentress Agency. Tops in executive placement in the advertising business. Fentress is on the 25th floor of one of the great old Art Deco buildings on 57th Street, and as I got off the elevator, I saw this glamorous movie star type wandering around the floor looking lost.
Pardon me, but I'm a stranger to the city and this building. Could you direct me to the office of the Fentress Agency?
Yeah, sure. I can do better than that. That's where I'm heading. Why don't you come along?
You are very kind. Is this Fentress a good agency?
Oh, sure. It's the best. Are you looking for a job in advertising?
Oh, not exactly. I have some business with a gentleman I expect to call. His name is Charles Williams?
Charles? Well, that's me.
Oh, but how fortunate. Here I was desolated to think that I would have to sit in some empty room waiting for...
No, wait. Hold it a second, madame. Why are you looking for me?
I think you have something for me. The Muzio Gambit is totally unsound opening. Well, have you?
Sure. I wasn't expecting it to...
You have something for me?
Yeah, right. Here it is.
Thank you. And to show you that I sincerely appreciate this favor you have done for me, please accept this.
She handed me an envelope and walked to the elevator and left. I stood for a moment turning the envelope over in my hands and then opened it. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were five crisp, new $1,000 bills. I forgot all about seeing Frank Fentress and headed for the atrium of the building where I'd played chess with the old man.
Good day, Mr. Williams.
Change that to strange day, Mr. Chessman. That trinket, huh? Worthless, hmm? A mere nothing. Then tell me why she gave me $5,000 for it.
Softly, Mr. Williams, softly. Why don't you sit down? We'll have another game.
No, I'm not playing any more games with you until I know what your game is.
I cannot satisfy your curiosity or even carry on a rational conversation with you standing there and raising your voice at me. If you sit down, we can discuss whatever it is that has made you so upset.
Okay.
Oh, well, as long as you're sitting, we might as well play.
Forget it.
I find that I talk better when I'm playing.
I don't. Now, look, Chessman, I don't like being maneuvered. I'm not a pawn in a chess game.
I never said you were. But you seem to blame me for what's upsetting you.
Oh, and why shouldn't I? I mean, some strange woman comes up to me... No, you might say ambushes me because I know darn well she was waiting for me. Then gives me that line you told me about the Muzio Gambit. And when I give her the coin, she hands me an envelope with $5,000 in it.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. A fantastic tale, Mr. Williams. If true.
If true?
It's only fair that I play white today.
Now, look, here. Take a look at these $1,000 bills.
I don't know much about you, Mr. Williams, but I am not susceptible to bribes. Put that money away, and let's play chess.
I don't believe that.
I've moved. Pawn to queen four.
You mean you don't know anything about this money?
Your move.
I asked you a question.
Move.
Now, look, I don't know anything about the queen's pawn opening, but... Okay. Knight to king's bishop three.
Playable.
The money. What about it?
I know nothing about it. Move.
Pawn to king three. And you never said anything to me about the Muzio gambit being unsound, huh?
Of course, but that was just a jest. Maybe someone overheard me and carried it a bit further.
Now, where did you get that coin? Was it stolen?
Ridiculous. Your move.
But $5,000?
I can't understand your anger about the money. I should think a sum like that would come in handy with someone out of work.
I don't like the way I got it.
You can afford to be choosy. Wonderful. Oh, by the way, have you ever handled an institutional account?
No. I guess I'll have to move my bishop.
It would seem advisable. I have a good friend, Mr. Williams, highly placed in the Larson Tool and Die Company. Tompkins is his name. He told me they're going in for a campaign of institutional advertising. I think you'd have a chance if you went to see him. And of course, you can use my name.
Look, I told you, I don't have a background in...
That may not matter. It's worth your time, anyway. Checkmate, I believe.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Too bad. You didn't play as well today.
Besides being unfamiliar with that opening, I was distracted.
Of course. Are you going to see Mr. Tompkins?
Yeah, well, I'll think about it.
Might be very good for you. By the way, you lost.
Yes, I know.
Then I'll take my winnings. Your key to the executive washroom.
Is it possible that the key to an executive washroom can be the key to the solution of a most mysterious and perhaps sinister puzzle? On the surface, it seems most unlikely. But on the other hand, the chess master seems to know exactly what he's doing and why. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Now True Value Hardware Stores are offering a convenient and efficient alternative to the messy job of handling and disposing of food scraps, coffee grounds, and other kitchen wastes. Hi, Pat Summerall to say their 1/2 horsepower True Value Waste Disposer is a quiet-running, continuous feed model that features stainless steel blades and grind chamber for long, dependable service. And this efficient, convenient kitchen helper, the 1/2 horsepower True Value Waste Disposer, is available exclusively at participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Centers.
I'm Lorette Rupi, Director of Peace Corps. In 60 countries around the world, Peace Corps volunteers are sharing their skills and knowledge with people who really need them. But we need more volunteers, and we need them now. Volunteers are urgently needed in agriculture, math, science, and biology. Call Peace Corps now for more information. 800-424-8580. It's the toughest job you'll ever love.
A public service message of this station.
And Peace Corps.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a musical medley of toe-tapping harp songs. Everybody dance!
Heart of my heart. Head of my heart, I love you.
Say, everybody, let's have another bottle of champagne.
I love you, heart and soul.
We need more sour cream and more butter.
Heart. It's funny, after all the songs written about the heart, you'd think we'd learn to take better care of it. This message brought to you by the American Heart Association, who asks you to tell someone you love to take better care of their heart. Give someone you love the gift of love.
Your gift is a gift of love.
To paraphrase William Shakespeare, all the world's a chessboard, and all the men and women pawns. You prefer the original? So do I. But reading the daily newspapers, it's difficult not to get the feeling that we're all pawns in a gigantic power struggle, manipulated by forces over which we have no control. Charlie Williams feels he is being manipulated. But why and for what purpose remains a mystery.
It took me some time to get the washroom key off my key ring, but I finally accomplished it, and as I handed it to Mr. Chessman, he gave me a slip of paper in return.
That's my friend Tompkins' address. He'll be expecting you tomorrow at your convenience.
I haven't decided about that yet. I'm still not satisfied with your explanation or non-explanation of what's been happening.
Hello again, Mr. Chessman.
Ah, Ben. You remember Ben Bradley, Mr. Williams. The gentleman who warned you against playing with me.
Yes, I remember.
I believe Ben has had a change of heart about playing and has come back for another game. Am I right, Ben?
I don't appreciate your sense of humor, Chessman. You know darn well I've come to play. Or do I have a choice?
Oh, we always have choices. Just as in chess. It's up to us to make the right moves. Now, sit down, Ben, and see about your move.
I've been married to you for 5 years, and I still don't understand you, Charlie Williams.
Now, I love you, Susan.
I love you, too, but you're not going to get away with changing the subject.
Okay. I want to see Frank Fentress before I see this Tompkins.
Why?
Because I know Frank. I know his agency. He's legitimate.
How do you know Tompkins isn't?
I don't, but look, $5,000, what do we do with the money?
Put it in the bank.
How do I show it on my income tax? Well, what did I do to earn it?
Don't ask me. Ask that crazy old man you played chess with. He started the whole thing.
I have.
And what did he say?
He claimed he didn't know anything about it. Do you believe that?
I don't know what to believe.
He even had the nerve to suggest I might have been lying about it.
Well, if he really didn't know...
Come on, Sue. He was the one who gave me that rigmarole about the Muzio Gambit. And she repeated it word for word. I just wish I knew somebody with the police or the FBI that I could tell about this.
I don't like the sound of the police, Charlie. After all, there's nothing very criminal about what's happened. Isn't it possible that this old man really took a liking to you and tried to get you a job at this tool and die plant?
Yeah, it is possible. I just wish that there was some way I could test it.
You can test it by going out and seeing this Tompkins and talking to him.
Wait a minute. Wait, I just got an idea. I think I found a way to get some answers. The next day, I went right to the lobby of the building where Chessman hung out. His usual table was empty, so I sat down and waited. About 11 o'clock, he showed up carrying his chessboard and his box with the pieces. He spotted me right away, and as he sat down...
Good morning, Mr. Williams. Bright and early today, aren't we? How did your talk with Mr. Tompkins go?
I haven't seen him yet. That's why I was waiting here.
Care for a game?
No, not now, thanks. I really don't have the time. You see, I had a lucky break yesterday. I got my old job back.
Huh? Congratulations.
Yeah, that's why it didn't make any sense to go and see your friend.
I understand. But why were you waiting for me?
I know it sounds crazy, but I came for my washroom key. I don't think it would look too good if I said I'd thrown it away since I know it's not worth anything to you, I'd like to have it back.
But you lost it on the field of battle, so to speak. Debt of honor.
Oh, come on, Mr. Chessman. You say you have my best interest at heart. The key can't mean anything to you.
I play fair, and I play by my rules, Mr. Williams. I won that key, and it's mine. If you'd like me to write a note to your employers telling them the circumstances...
You really are a first-class nut, aren't you?
I'm sorry you feel that way. I'd certainly be more than happy to play another game and put the key up against something else that has no value for you.
I'm going to make you a promise, Chessman. The next time we play, I'll win.
That's a challenge that I will happily accept.
When Chessman refused to return my key, I knew what I had to do. And I did it before setting off for the Larson Tool and Die Company to keep my appointment with Mr. Tompkins. They were located out in Queens, and when I got there, the buildings looked so legitimate that my heart sank. I walked in anyway, gave my name, and after a suitable wait, was escorted into Mr. Tompkins' office.
Sit down, Mr. Williams.
Oh, thank you. I take it you were expecting me?
I was, and I wasn't.
Oh?
Mr. Chessman called and told me you'd found another job.
Yeah, well, that fell through.
I'm sorry to hear that. Can you give me a little of your background?
The last 5 years, I was a junior account executive with White, Glaze & Pfeiffer, handling a chain store houseware account.
Mm-hmm.
But none of my experience is in institutional advertising.
I understand. Now, the salary is $7.50 per week with several fringe benefits. Hospitalization, medical plan, a good retirement plan.
No, but about the job itself, sir.
I'm offering it to you, Williams. If you care to, we can go down and take a look at your office.
But aren't we rushing things a bit? I mean, wouldn't you like to hear any of my ideas?
Well, I don't think you can formulate any ideas until you've made yourself familiar with our entire operation. You haven't studied us, have you?
No. But I'd like to hear from you what made you suddenly decide to enter institutional advertising.
I'm afraid I don't have the time to go into that now. Why don't we go along and look at your office?
I walked out of the Larson plant with pretty much the same feelings I had when I entered, which didn't please Susan at all when I got home.
I'm trying to understand, darling. I'm really trying, but you seem to have changed so. I don't know how to say it, but you're different.
Yeah, you wouldn't say that if I'd taken the job.
What can be wrong with a job paying $750 a week as advertising manager for a perfectly reputable concern like Larson?
I wish you'd played chess. I mean, that old man and me, we're playing a game, and he's trying to manipulate me like one of his pieces.
So because of this feeling, you're going to turn down a job you need and which you can do easily? Is that it?
I haven't made up my mind. I left it open when I said I had to think it over. Tompkins knew I was telling the truth. I'm still thinking it over.
We've been at this for hours, and I'll be happy to go along with whatever you decide. But I'd be much happier if you could give me one single hard fact, one good reason why you should turn it down.
Come in, Williams. Yeah, I'm happy you decided to come aboard.
There are still some details I'd like cleared up, Mr. Tompkins. I mean, I'm beginning to get an idea of what you expect from me.
That's good. As of this moment, you're on the payroll. And it happens to work out very well.
Oh, how's that?
Your office won't be ready today, so you can do me a favor.
Oh, of course.
I understand. You're a chess enthusiast.
I beg your pardon?
I'm talking about chess. And our mutual acquaintance, Mr. Chessman. Since he won't be around today, I'd like you to play a game with him.
Now, what's that got to do with my job?
I said I was asking a favor. This is a running contest between Chessman and me. And since we both know our friend Quirk about stakes, I'm furnishing you with a stake for today's game. There it is, on the desk.
Now, forget it. You must think I'm a fool. I mean, it's perfectly obvious that you and Chessman are running some kind of con game, and I don't want any part of it. I mean, you're not offering me a job. You want a messenger service. You want me to carry this disc to Chessman.
Mr. Williams, I asked you to play a game of chess. If you win, you bring this disc back to me. If you lose, that's the fortune of war.
I'll bet you right now all the money I have in the world that I don't win.
No bet. You sound like a loser.
I think you're going to lose, Mr. Tompkins. Now, I don't know what you and Chessman are doing, but I'll bet the police will be interested in finding out.
Finding out what, William?
That these so-called worthless stakes that Chessman plays for signify something really important. What, I don't know. But as I said, the police will find out.
Sit down, William.
Huh?
Sit down. Now, listen to me. Let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that your wild guess is correct and you carry out your threat to go to the police. Now, let's examine your position. The police have only your word for it that the talisman you won from Chessman was the same you later passed on to your accomplice.
My accomplice?
Exactly. You passed the coin or talisman or whatever to her. She gave you $5,000 for it. Were you so shocked and surprised that you reported that strange occurrence to the police? Not at all. You pocketed it. And you turned again to play with Chessman, didn't you?
Well, at that time, I didn't know.
Didn't know what, Williams? What do you know? Or think you know?
There are people who prefer to be ostriches. Don't tell me this. I don't want to hear it. And there are others who are insatiably curious and have to know everything. Those are two extremes. Since I'm not an extremist, I find both extremes unpleasant. But if I were in Charlie Williams' place, I'd want to know what was going on. You will find out shortly when I bring you Act Three.
I'm Dr. Jerome Holland, chairman of the American Red Cross. Like most black Americans, I'm concerned about high blood pressure. Both my parents suffered from it, which means I have to take extra precautions. High blood pressure usually has no warning signals, no symptoms. When was the last time you had your blood pressure checked? If you can't remember, it's been too long. Call your doctor or call Red Cross. We'll help. Will you?
Excuse me, I own that shoe store across the street.
Uh-huh.
Want to buy it?
Well,
I'll be honest. I have great shoes, but no customers, so I'm ready to sell the whole thing at any price, you name it.
$12.
Sold.
Ooh.
Well, now that you own a shoe store, what'll you do with it?
Well, advertise.
Well, I tried. A lot of newspaper ads and TV and magazines.
Well, I'll probably go radio.
Radio?
Yeah, according to the latest studies, everyday radio reaches more people than newspaper, TV, or magazine.
How did you
know? What's more, radio targets customers. I'll match up the right stations for my dressier lines and different stations for young casual. Since radio costs a lot less than newspapers or TV, I'll get good efficiency.
Listen, I'd like to buy my store back from you.
Well,
at a fair profit.
Okay.
How much do you want?
$156,000.
That's a pretty fair profit.
Take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
Radio. It costs less, targets your best customers, and it sells. Radio. Red hot because it works. For more facts on radio, call this station of the Radio Advertising Bureau. They brought you this message.
In the days when luxury liners swept across the Atlantic, traveling to and from Europe aboard those queens of the seas was the ultimate in luxury. Passengers were constantly warned not to play cards with strangers because they were card sharks who made their living on the big boats. However, I've never seen or heard of warnings about sitting down for a game of chess with a stranger. But after hearing what happened to Charlie Williams, I'm beginning to think perhaps there should be.
I sat there in Tompkins' office at the Larson Company looking into Tompkins' calm, complacent face and hated him. I hated him because I felt the truth in what he'd said. I hated him because I really didn't have a logical answer to his question.
Well, Williams, I repeat the question. What do you know, or think you know?
Tompkins, I know enough to realize that I'm being used as a pawn, and not at any chess game.
You made some threats. Something about going to the authorities. I'm beginning to think you're seriously deranged, Williams. And it would be best for me to nip your nonsense in the bud. Now, how do you suggest I go about that?
I have no suggestions.
I think the wisest course for me is to call the police and tell them I have a man here to whom I've offered a job and he's creating a disturbance.
Okay, put the phone down.
I honestly believe you are unstable.
All right. You don't have to practice your act because you don't have to call the police.
Does that mean you've decided to take the job with all the duties and responsibilities that it entails?
Well, it seems I have no choice.
Ah, I'm glad you've come to your senses. It really would have been most unpleasant for you if you hadn't.
On my way to my chess game with the old man, I had an idea. I stopped and walked through the plant on the way out, looking and talking with some of the workers and foremen who all seemed genuine and unaware of the trickery that I believed was going on. When I returned to the lobby, I spied Mr. Chessman in his accustomed seat with the inevitable chessboard set up before him. I walked over to the table.
Good afternoon, Mr. Williams. I am indeed happy to see you. Please, have a seat.
Oh, thanks.
I think we might even allow you to have the white pieces today. You play a much stronger game with white, you know.
What difference does it make? It's all fixed.
Fixed? How can one fix a chess game?
Well, easily. When a pro like you plays an amateur like me, you can win or lose just as you like.
You have a feverish imagination, as I've noted before, Mr. Williams. But shall we begin? Oh, have you brought your stake?
Sure, sure. Here it is.
And would you like to have your washroom key back?
You must know it doesn't matter now.
Fine. Then we can be sure that it's valueless. Mr. Williams, you're a trickster. And I don't believe you realize how dangerous it can be to attempt this shabby sort of subterfuge.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The disc, sir. The disc. This is not the disc that you were given at the plant.
It must be.
Mr. Williams, I'm going to give you just 60 seconds to produce the real disc.
But it's valueless. What difference does it make?
You're not dealing with ninnies, Mr. Williams. There are 50 seconds left.
So you admit that there is some value to these little tokens you play for, huh?
40 seconds.
I say that's the disc Tompkins gave me, and that is the disc. Now, you must believe me.
30 seconds.
You know, there's really nothing you can do to me. I mean, are you going to threaten to shoot me or poison me right here in the lobby?
Mr. Williams, I suggest that you call your wife.
What?
I said, call your wife. And I suggest when you speak with her, please reassure her.
I had an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach as I went to a phone and dialed my number and waited for it to ring.
Hello?
Susan? Susan, this is Charlie. Is everything okay?
What's going on? What are you doing, Charlie?
Susan, there's nothing to worry about, I promise you.
But there's a man and a woman here, and they frighten me, Charlie. I'm worried. No, I'm scared to death. Are you all right?
Susan, I'm fine. Believe me, I'm fine. And I promise you nothing's going to happen to either of us.
When will you be home?
I'll be home for dinner, darling. And Susan, darling, I know you'll be happy to hear. I took the job with Larson. I don't know whether I was more angry or more scared. But as I went back and sat down opposite Chessman, I knew I was shaking, and I tried to control it.
Well, I hope you had a nice chat with your lovely wife.
Okay, there's what you want.
Thank you. Shall we play now?
Do we have to continue with this ridiculous charade?
Whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad.
You're quite a philosopher as well as a chess player, but I'd like you to tell me how you knew I didn't give you the real disc.
If I told you, then you would know as much as I do. And the next time we play...
There isn't going to be a next time.
Oh? Why not?
You made a mistake, Chessman. You made a bad move when you sent those people to threaten my wife. Now, when I go to the police, Susan will be able to back up my story.
You do underestimate me, Mr. Williams. No one threatened your wife in any way. All those people did was to express their concern about your behavior, which has been rather erratic, to say the least.
I don't believe you.
Of course you do. Would you please make your first move?
You really intend to go through with this chess game, Fart?
Your stupidity is monumental. For me, this is a ritual and a pastime. Now, even if your absurd imaginings were true, wouldn't it be logical to try to checkmate me and thus stop me from winning this disc?
Well,
move.
Okay.
Thank you. There, you played well with the Muzio Gambit last time. I'm giving you the opportunity to try it again.
Why not? No matter what you say, Susan doesn't think I'm crazy.
Of course not. By the way, instead of playing purely defense against the Muzio Gambit, there is a counter gambit. There.
And when I explain everything to her, she'll understand.
Understand what? That you've been behaving strangely ever since you lost your job, imagining all sorts of hobgoblins, even going so far as to fantasize that a perfectly legitimate job offer had sinister undertones.
And I can convince her that it does. There, there's my move. There. And who do you think she's going to believe, me or a couple of strangers?
You may be rash enough to play the Muzio Gambit, but I don't think you'll be rash enough to risk your marriage. And indeed, your entire life. Your move.
You bet it is. And this time you're the one who's taking chances. I still say my word will weigh more heavily with Susan than anything you say.
Perhaps. But how about facts? Hard facts. For instance, if your key to the executive washroom were to be discovered in, shall we say, a place that might make you a prime suspect in a most serious matter, what would your wife's reaction be to that?
You'd actually frame me?
I'm moving my rook's pawn.
I'm curious. What would the charges be? Embezzlement? Huh? Drug dealing?
You would do better to pay attention to the game. Your position is deteriorating rapidly.
Yes, I'll admit that's a smart move you just made, but you're really playing another game besides this, aren't you?
You still have a move.
I don't like my position.
If I were playing white, I shouldn't care for it very much either. Do you resign?
No. No, not yet. Oh, no, that's no good.
You don't really have any options, Mr. Williams. Surely even a player of your limited ability can see the situation is hopeless. Resign.
Now, look, I'll make a deal with you, Chessman. Tell me what the stakes are. Then I'll make my move.
You're in no position to make any deals. You seem to have forgotten that two of my pieces are surrounding your queen. I, of course, refer to your wife.
You wouldn't dare make a move there because that would bring you out into the open.
Your position is hopeless. Either resign or move.
No, no, no. I don't agree that my position is hopeless because I believe in miracles.
I don't. Move.
Why don't you just grab the disc?
I play by the rules. Move.
Okay. All right. I think my move may come as a surprise to you.
A pleasant surprise. Because on this move, I call check and meet. You see it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a mate, all right.
I'll take the disc. Victor Sergeyev, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Checkmate, I believe, Mr. Chessman Sergeyev, or whatever your name is.
I don't know you, sir. Your credentials seem to be in order, but your actions are outrageous. What possible interest can the FBI have in me?
Espionage. The transmission of secret information from the United States to the Soviet Union.
Absurd. Totally ridiculous.
Yeah, the FBI told me they'd been working on the case for a long time. They finally cracked it. The information is in the disc.
You seem to know a lot more than I do. The disc was in your possession. And I suggest to this agent that he look very closely into your background.
The information is cleverly concealed in the disc, and that tiny indent near the center identifies the disc. It's hardly noticeable to anyone who doesn't know it's there.
All these ridiculous charges, which won't stand up for a minute in a court of law.
I think they will, Sergeyev. You see, Mr. Williams came to us last night and told us his problem. Before he went to see your pal Tompkins, we had him wired. As a matter of fact, Sergeyev, he's been wired all day. And your conversation makes very interesting listening.
I'd rather say fascinating. Whatever your game is. I think they'll let you take your chessboard to the slammer. I looked for a big story in the papers, but someone must have put a lid on it because I only found a small item on page 7, noting that a suspected Soviet spy ring had been broken. Susan was just as happy that my name wasn't mentioned, and even happier when I got a great new job. Walking through that two-story lobby the other day, I saw two young fellows playing chess. I didn't stop.
Everyone knows about the great victory Bobby Fischer of the United States won over Boris Spassky of the Soviet Union in Iceland in 1972. But only the Icelanders know the real reason why Fischer attained his miraculous ability to escape Spassky's attacks. The match was staged next to a farm called Elveshill, and the natives knew that Spassky had offended the elves and was duly punished. I'll be back with the relationship of chess to women's rights after these messages.
At a restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky, blind people don't have to ask what's on the menu. They can read it themselves in Braille. The Braille menus are there because a group of local people thought it would be a good idea. They got together and made it happen. In fact, all across America, both disabled and non-disabled people are participating in similar community programs. In Vernon Parish, Louisiana, they're modifying disabled people's homes to make them more accessible. And in Champaign, Illinois, disabled children are able to share a playground because a group of volunteers got involved. This is the National Year of Disabled Persons. Is this the year you get involved? Call the office of your mayor or county commissioner for more information. A public service on behalf of the National Office on Disability from the Ad Council and this station.
When chess was played in Persia in the 6th century, women's rights were unheard of. Yet women's livers might well note the way the game was designed. First, the placement of the pieces. The queen is a lady, so she always chooses her color. And which is the most powerful piece on the board? The queen. And which has the least power? The poor, masculine king. As a famous Belgian detective might say, it gives one curiously to think. Our cast included Paul Heck, Fred Gwynne, Lameis Faris, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by White Westinghouse Appliance Company. This is Tammy Grimes inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
The Chess Master from CBS Radio Mystery Theater here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
That came to us from our listener, a listener suggestion from Joe, who we got to meet.
Yeah, Joe recently made a cross-country trek to come see one of our live shows. And he came up afterwards, he introduced himself, and he told me, like, yeah, and I also sent you a listener quest quite a while ago. And he goes, I understand why you didn't play it, because it's CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And because I do try to be honest with our listeners, mm-hmm. I said, yes, Joe, that's probably why we didn't listen to it. Because here's the honest truth. If you hear a CBS Radio Mystery Theater on this show, it's because either Eric brought it or we've used up most of our listener requests. And that's all that's left on the listener request list.
And that's because of two things. One, it's an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the success rate of them, it's batting about 300 for baseball. That'd be awesome.
And it's an hour long.
Yeah, and it's an hour.
It's mainly
long.
That it's an hour long. There have been a couple CBS Radio Mystery Theaters that I really liked, right. But a lot that I haven't.
Yep.
Clearly, Joe knows how to get his request put on the top of the list.
This is the point.
Yeah.
You want your request done, fly in.
Yeah. So thank you, Joe. And I was able to find a copy of this episode that did not contain the commercials.
Yeah.
Which I can't stand.
Ugh. I love the commercials so much. But then again, we have a different connection to CBS. It's a warm nostalgia blanket for me.
But it makes the episodes longer.
Here's the other weird thing. Tammy Grimes never got a fair shake because E.G. Marshall was E.G. Marshall. And I love his voice. I don't even know what he's saying half the time. He's like a baseball game in the background. Like, I don't know. Oh, E.G. So did I just say that like that? That was gross. Anyway, but if you objectively listen to Tammy Grimes and not go, you're not E.G. Marshall, she's great.
Yeah.
And it's always jarring when you don't know and you hit, oh, I'll listen to this CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And you come in, I'm Tammy Grimes. Oh.
You're not my dad.
You're not E.G. Marshall. Do we have any information on Tammy Grimes? At all, like, where did she come from? Where'd she go? Is she still around?
She was an actor.
Is she a Patreon?
She was married to Christopher Plummer. Amanda Plummer is her daughter.
Oh.
What?
You're talking about actor lineage.
Yeah, who's Amanda Plummer?
Oh, Amanda Plummer is awesome.
Who is she?
The first thing that comes to mind is
Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I saw that.
Any of you bleepity bleepies move, I'll execute every bleepity bleep bleep last one of you.
Yep. Cool. The other thing I love about this episode, speaking of warm, comfy blankets, Fred Gwynne.
He's really good in this.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. I'm so old that my first thought isn't the Munsters. It's the Car 54 reference. And then I go, oh, and he was Herman Munster. And you got to get past that because that is a distinct voice, man. I mean, he can't hide he's Fred Gwynne.
I mean, I have that same mental roadblock. But also, in Cotton Club, he's a real bad guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that has helped me. Hearing his voice, I think that's Fred Gwynne, but he could be anybody.
Right.
Yeah, and he doesn't lean into the villainy here.
Yeah.
Partly because he doesn't want to give away the story yet. Mm-hmm. But for me, he filled the missing E.G. Marshall void because he played it in this very gentle, warm, fatherly or grandfatherly type of way that really kept you guessing throughout what his motives were. You knew they were nefarious in some way, but he played it so close to the vest, you couldn't really tell how. Yeah. But there was always a little hint that he could be a good, mysterious actor. By actor, I mean a person who is controlling the events of the story.
That grandfatherly, nice approach, it's still, from the moment he started to talk, he made me edgy.
Yeah.
There was something about the character that was like, what? Something's wrong with this.
They were never, and he as a character was never really hiding the fact that I'm manipulating people.
Right.
But just never revealed to what end.
Yeah. Well, because he's literally and figuratively playing chess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just because it's also so insistent on his rules of it's going to be this.
Yeah.
And he kind of gets away with it because they're innocuous, because it's not asking much, but he's very demanding about it.
It has a great opening line. I was fired today.
Yeah.
It's very simple, but it immediately puts you in the head of this guy and how he's feeling and what his emotional state is. So it's very funny and pleasing when Mr. Chessman asks for a bauble of no value and he goes,
I have the executive
yes.
washroom key. That yep. no longer has any value for me. So it also helps you as a listener believe like why he just decides to just sit down and play this game with this guy, because mm-hmm. he's at a complete and utter loose end.
Here's a complaint, I guess is the best way to put it, about CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And we've discussed this many times, but if you're new and you haven't heard my thing with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, grew up on it, love it. When I delve back into it, especially with this podcast, somewhat disappointed that it wasn't standing the test of time for me as someone that had listened to a lot of audio theater and this got left behind, right? It still has its moments, but it's not as great as I remembered it, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like if you're over 50, don't sit down and watch Happy Days. It's a terrible, terrible show. It does not stand the Welcome Back, Cotter. Oh, I loved that show as a kid, yeah. right? And then you watch it and you go, what's happening? Why?
Oh, no.
What's happening? Another one. Right? Probably avoid.
So CBS Radio Mystery Theaters had that, but one of the things that over 260 episodes of doing this podcast and really delving into audio theater is CBS Radio Mystery Theater's lack of Foley. Mm-hmm. The lack of it is disconcerting to the point where it seems lazy, like the later year Popeye cartoons. Like, you didn't even draw them blinking. So it was just like stills and him going, ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. So, but
that's time.
But they're cranking out an hour a week for over 1,400 episodes.
Yeah.
And so they're writing, and then there's budget restraints, and they're paying top name actors, mm-hmm. and they're getting them in, and they're saying, you know, I'm sure it's like, come on in and read this quick, and cranking these things out so that production value isn't great, and they're very talky. Here's my point. This one, same thing. It's very talky. It's not a lot of Foley, not a lot of production value. And I didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, we often, when talking about CBS Radio Mystery Theater, we're like, we will discuss, like, there's 15 minutes in this script that is unnecessary, that is clearly mm-hmm. filler. And this script, I thought, had no fat on it.
I agree.
It was very lean. The three acts were broken up really nicely. And the mystery of who this chessman was carried through right until the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, my only criticism is it was such a compelling mystery. I think I inflated it in my head. And I forgot about the era
yep.
this was recorded in. And so when it was a Russian spy ring, I was like, wah, wah, wah. I couldn't help being a little bit disappointed by that. I wanted it to be more mysterious.
Touch going back and listening to it after I knew the story of early on, like one of the first things it says is talking about how Americans love competition, that he comments on Americans.
I'm with you, Joshua, so much. That is my only complaint, is what is happening? What's the coin? What's going on? Who are these people? Is it the devil? Is he selling his soul? You know, all of these mm-hmm. different. And when it was Russian spy ring, I was let down. I was like, it does make sense. And it all adds up. And good for you that there's perfectly logical storytelling. Nothing wrong with it. But I wanted it to be something bigger than that.
My only complaint in that direction was, having now seen so many documentaries about spies and how they operate, like, oh, this is a really awkward way to be a spy.
Right, right.
Yes, it's definitely the conclusion you have to turn off the radio and go, that was cool, and not think anymore about it. It's overly convoluted. It is right. designed to bring so much attention to you.
Like, if part of your spy ring is, and this guy has to get $1,000 bills changed or deposited somehow. Like, that's a lot of attention right there.
Yeah, and in my head, he's dressed like Frankenstein while he plays chess.
So
that's it even worse.
That's the worst part, is getting past the Fred Gwynn and not seeing Herman Munster. A queen's to knight bishop 4.
But there are, that aside, there are some great tense moments in here. I think mm-hmm. I love, and it's the first time that Gwynn as chessman shows a little bit of threat and a little bit of anger and frustration in his performance, is when the narrator is pushing him on what's going on, and he says, call your wife.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when you speak to her, reassure her.
Yep.
Phrasing it that way was so ominous.
Mm-hmm.
The need to call and reassure your wife of something vague.
Mm-hmm.
They had an odd choice in here of that early character who comes in to say, don't play chess with him. Don't play chess with that guy. That's Ben Bradley. Like, the editor of the Washington Post? Like, clearly that... At the time, at the year this would be released, like, that's what everyone would think of hearing the name Ben Bradley.
Oh yeah. I did not make that connection, but you're right.
I don't think that's the implication, but it's just a weird choice of name.
Right. It would be like saying, I don't know.
Spiro Agnew, yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson.
Yes.
Spiro Agnew. I was thinking something contemporary, Tim.
For the year.
For the year. Something in today's world would be Tammy Grimes' daughter, whatever her name was.
Amanda Plummer.
Yeah, Amanda Plummer.
Honey Bunny.
Before we send this to a vote, what other thoughts do we have?
Well, my question was, did you guys catch the throwaway comment that he makes, the fair play comment as a narrator when he says, well, I went to see so-and-so at the diecast metal shop. You know, he's offered a job somewhere else by Mr. Chessman. And he goes something along the lines of, but first I stopped to do one more thing. But he doesn't tell you what and moves on. And that is the window during which he goes and talks to the FBI and sets up this whole sting. Did that pass you by the first listen, or did you catch it right away?
I caught it only as much as that's going to be whatever happened here. I have no idea what it is.
I didn't catch it. And then when I realized, oh, he set them up, I remembered him saying it then, which is exactly how the writer intended me to take that.
Yeah.
And go, oh, that's right. He went and did a thing, and I didn't care.
And I really liked the... carrying the chess metaphor through to the end of, like, I'm just going to go ahead and lose this game because this is not the real game.
Right.
Like Tim, I caught when he went and stopped and did one more thing that he was doing the solution, whatever it was going to be. And so I admire it because it just raised the stakes for me. It was super mysterious, but then the problem being that it raised the stakes. So I thought it was going to be something far more clever than, I went to the FBI and said there was this weird guy playing chess.
Right.
But like you said, Tim, it is a chess move, though, right? Like, it's something unexpected that he does. But I was thinking it would be a little more clever.
There was one detail that bugged me. The line that Chessman tells him, like, someone's going to come to you and say this. And I can't read exactly, but it was like the Maginot Defense is a very...
Yeah, whatever it was.
The Muzio Gambit?
Yes, Muzio Gambit was a very outdated whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes home and tells his wife, but he changes one word. He changes from very to totally. And then when he meets the woman, she says totally.
Look at you.
It means nothing.
But it seems significant to you.
But implied to me, like, she knows that he changed the word.
Or they just, as actors or writers, made a mistake.
Yes. Or I misheard the first time and it was totally all three times, but I don't think so.
See, I know nothing about chess. What I know from chess is just radio, movies, and TV shows like this that use it as a narrative device. I've never played chess. I don't know any of the rules of chess.
Interesting.
So it makes me wonder, because the Muzio Gambit is a real...
Yes.
thing, that there's something I'm missing, something that makes this far more layered and complex, that this entire story somehow mirrors the Muzio Gambit, if I'm even pronouncing it right.
I don't think so. It's more or less just they pulled one of a move that had a good name.
Yeah, I thought the implication was that he was a average player.
Yeah. I'm just fascinated you've never played chess. Interesting. Nope. I would have assumed you have to be someone. So if I sat a chessboard in front of you, you wouldn't know how to move the pieces.
I go, that's a horsey. That's a king.
You do know something.
Yes.
I think we're being set up here, Tim.
You guys want to put some money down? Going to play the horsey gambit.
You play chess?
Yes.
I play chess. I know exactly how it works. And I've played it many times. I have never, in probably, I would, without exaggeration, I've probably played it 200 times in my life, sat down and played the game with somebody. No matter who I played, 8-year-old or whatever. I've never won. I have never won a game of chess. All of a sudden, I'll be like, oh, I'll move this over here, and then I'll trap that guy. And all of a sudden, checkmate. And I go, what? Dang it.
I have occasionally won. I'm not very good.
Yeah.
I've gone through some tutorials, so I have some basic concepts of setting up your pieces.
You play that 3-level chess thing from Star Trek, I bet.
Oh, I'd love to. 3D chess. I have played that before.
Of course you have.
Yes, I have.
Before we vote, I do want to mention the weird summation at the end when Tammy Grimes comes back and tries to somehow make this a story about women's lib.
Yes, that was odd.
It's a strange and clunky lens to suddenly view this story through where she's, you know, the queen has all the power. And then just to make it even stranger, she quotes Hercule Poirot.
It's funny that you're saying that you found it clunky. I now listening to you, like, yeah, it is kind of clunky. There's no reason for it. I was just infatuated with, she brought to my attention, yeah, that's weird, this really old game that the queen has all the power. You wouldn't think in the history of mankind that the male figure in a game would be at risk and does nothing, and then the queen is all powerful. You're right. It's clunky. Why use this in here as a conclusion?
Because that idea is in no way reflected in the story we just listened to, which is all male characters.
But the horsey also has a lot of power.
Yeah. Look at you and your horse lib.
Up to and over one. Up to and over one. Oh, I don't know.
It moves like it's drunk. That's how knights move.
Well, now can we vote?
Yes.
We said at the top of this that it's risky for us to do CBS Radio Mystery Theater for a lot of reasons. One,
we could be killed.
One, there's a lot of fill. Usually to fill an hour because it shouldn't have been an hour program a lot of the times. A lot of them don't stand the test time, poor production value, cranked out shows, very talky. We've mentioned all the things, and occasionally we run into one and we go, oh, that was good. This was excellent. And I think I'm saying it's excellent through the lens of being disappointed by CBS Radio Mystery Theater. I'm not sure if it wasn't under that title, if I would be as praising as I am. I was just so happy that it didn't peter out in the middle or just become a drag or something. And also that a man drove or flew 3,000 miles to beg us to do this episode.
He didn't beg. He shamed us.
He shamed us.
He kept his self-respect during the entire encounter.
I didn't.
It's one of the better, if not, I think it's in the top 10 of, for sure, of all of the CBS Radio Mystery Theaters I've ever listened to. I think it stands the test of time. I think it's really well written and really fun and really well done. And so there.
I follow suit without the qualifications. I think this is a fantastic episode that if you just stripped away the title and just like anyone you walk on the street, listen to this radio show, you, random stranger. They'd be pleased with the result. They would think this is really good. And I think a large part of that is, I mean, the script is really good. And Fred Gwynn puts a lot into this, and it sounds great.
You just figured out our next podcast, forcing strangers on the street to listen to something. Listen to this, you.
Okay, this is going to take an hour, so get comfy.
I hope you like 70s commercials. I think I'm on the same page as Tim. It's an above-average CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and I think particularly it uses its three-act structure well, and that to me is really important when I evaluate CBS Radio Mystery Theater because it's what sets it apart from other old-time radio that we generally listen to from the golden age is that it has that two-act structure. Mm-hmm. So I give it credit there. It does end for me with more of a whimper than a bang, so that's a drawback, but I think it definitely stands the test of time. I have heard others that I like more, and we've been so hard on CBS Radio Mystery Theater, I should say that I think there are a couple classics in there. I think The Golem and The Deadly Hour, those were two, at least that Tim and I greatly enjoyed.
That Christmas Village one, I can't remember what it was called. Christmas Village, but I really like that one.
No, yeah. No, that was one I thought sucked.
Yeah, you hated that one. And I brought that because I was looking for a Christmassy episode. Where they end up being in a dollhouse?
It was like a little Christmas decoration thing.
Decoration, yes. Mm. They were in the Christmas decoration.
And lastly, I do want to reiterate what Tim said, that I think Fred Gwynn gives a great performance mm-hmm. here. It's a, you know, sinister yet understated. So that does a lot for me, a really good central performance. So thank you so much, Joe, and thank you for coming to see our show.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, tell them stuff.
Please, if you haven't already, go visit ghoulishdelights.com. That is the home of this podcast. We have a bunch of episodes there. You can send us messages there. You can vote in polls. Let us know what you think. Comment on episodes. You can link to our social media pages. You can link to our Threadless store and get some Mysterious Old Radio swag. Or you can link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and become a member of the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society. You will receive an official card and button so that you can let other people know, strangers on the street. You can say, hey, you, I am a member of the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, and then get sprayed with mace. But it's still a benefit. You know, the other thing is, you don't have to drive across the entire country like Joe did. We give him a lot of credit for doing it, but if you become a patron, you can sit your butt in your own garbage house and just stream our performances live with your hundreds of cats and 50 years of newspapers and just have a time
collection.
So become a Patreon today.
Unfortunately, at least one of our listeners just looked around and went, hey, he's talking about me. And I want to be clear, Joe flew, he didn't drive.
Okay.
Hey, if you'd like to see us performing live like Joe, we do audio theater. The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society does recreations live on stage of classic old-time radio shows and a lot of our own original audio theater work. So please come see us by going to ghoulishdelights.com or mysteriousoldradiolisteningsociety.com. There you will see where we're performing every month, what theater, and what we're performing every month, unless, you know, it's 80 years from now and you're...
dead.
Heads in jars.
And you're doing a podcast about this podcast, then no, we're not performing anywhere. Anyway, so, but yeah, look it up and then you'll see what we're performing. And then also you can see us.
I hate the commercials.
You can see us live in person or watch us online. And you can also buy your ticket and watch us online at your convenience. You don't even need to be there that night. So. We'll take your money whenever you want to sit down and watch the dumb thing.
Just send us money and don't watch anything.
Please. That's the way. Please just send us money. What's coming up next?
Next is my pick. We'll be listening to the Honky Tonkers from a series. Get the laughs out now, boys.
I'm not done.
From a series we have not discussed yet on this podcast, Frontier Gentlemen. Until then...
Look out!
Honky Tonkers!
Oh, E.G.